Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. We are going to look back on this first round of the NFL draft in this special edition of our podcast. Won't be as long as normal today, but we are just going to look at some of the big talking points from the first night of the NFL draft in Chicago. And Jeff, we have to start with the quarterbacks. Jameis Winston went number one. Then Marcus Mariota, who I know you liked a lot, went second overall. And now there's a report on NFL.com that the Philadelphia Eagles offered the absolute farm to get him and Tennessee turned him down. Does that put more pressure on the Titans for this guy to succeed?
I think so. And I, the word I got yesterday was that they were talking about multiple first-rounders and good players. I mean, good players in the Eagles team right now that they were willing to unload to get Mariota. So that gives you a sense of just how strongly Chip felt about the guy that he had recruited and coached at Oregon.
Yeah, Fletcher Cox was one of those recommended. Michael Kendricks, Brandon Boykin, the slot corner, could have potentially been three defensive starters for the Titans there. A couple of first-round draft picks and a third-round draft pick was mentioned. The Eagles have denied this report, Jeff, and, the thing I wanted to ask you about from a coaching point of view is, I look at it from a journalistic side and there often isn't, any smoke without fire. And I think that the journalists work very hard to try and find these stories. And so I think there is an element of truth to them. So stories like Sam Bradford being offered to the Titans or the Chicago Bears offering Jay Cutler to the Tennessee Titans. How do John Fox and Chip Kelly now go back in and face those quarterbacks who they tried to get rid of?
Well, I think the reality of it is, Neil, and you're exactly right, that there's never, fire if there's no smoke. So, the reality in this business is you've got to try and upgrade your football team all the time. Players know it, coaches know it, front office people know it, and it's just the nature of the business. The reality for Jay Cutler, for example, is, hey, Jay, if you play well enough and you're a good enough team leader and you're all we're looking for, then there's no need for us to go out and try and find somebody new. And I think that same thing is, true in every guy that plays in the National Football League. It's the team's responsibility to get the best players they can get. And I certainly do believe, and Joe Aliotti, who worked as defensive coordinator at Oregon with Chip, and all the guys that I know that know Chip, said the same thing. You can bet he is doing everything he can to move up and get Mariota. I think the pressure now is squarely on Mariota, too, Neil, because, the fans now are aware of what Tennessee could have gotten had they moved that pick and given Mariota to the Eagles. You're talking about substantial numbers of players and draft choices for that one guy. So the bullseye now is on Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we're not going to look at every pick because I think we wouldn't do each of them justice. And you can read or listen to other people do that in different places. But we'll look at some of the topics and some of the issues from round one. And that non-trade was one of the stories of the night, Jeff. The NFL draft in the first round over the past 3 years has averaged 14 trades per first round. And we kind of billed that as what we were going to see. And there was all that drama and we had two trades and it just didn't quite materialize. Is that a reflection of this draft class? I mean, was it because I guess it's, everyone wants to trade down, but you've got to find somebody willing to trade up.
Yeah, and the reality of it was that this draft, to me, had the two quarterbacks and then a bunch of another tier of good players and then a bunch of good players that are not quite elite-level players. So to trade down, you want to make sure that if you give up a shot at a quarterback that you're going to get at least two elite-level players with those picks that you gain or players off another roster. The thing about rookies now, the way the thing is plotted in the NFL, those rookies help you in the salary cap because they, a rookie is plotted now. He can only earn so much money coming in. So a veteran player who's been in the league is in his second contract, those guys are more expensive, and you've always got to weigh where they impact your cap.
And Jeff, it's hard to sort of predict where how the you know, there's always surprises. There are always little shocks here and there, and there are always teams that take players where they don't have a need at that position. And I suppose that's where it comes down to that argument of you take best player available or you take an area of need. And if we look, you know, pretty early in this draft, the Washington Redskins needed an offensive lineman, and they take Brandon Scherff out of Iowa. And then the New York Jets, who've already got two very good 3-4 defensive ends in Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson, they couldn't resist taking Leonard Williams.
Had to. Absolutely had to. He was rated by many people, and I thought the same thing. The best defensive player in the draft. He gives you all kinds of flexibility to play any of the four positions across the front. Now you've got a rotation with those two other guys, and you put that rookie in there with them, that's going to really, really help the Jets pass rush. You can never have enough good big guys. I was really shocked at the Scherff pick because Scherff Neal is a guard, not a tackle. And they talk about playing him at tackle. I just don't see that. He's tough, physical, he's nasty, he's a mauler, but he's not the kind of athlete that you want at tackle to protect your quarterback.
We'll have a look at the wide receivers in a minute, Jeff. It was a good first round for wide receivers, but it was the return of the running back as well. We had two go in the first round. We hadn't had that since 2012 with some of those guys. Trent Richardson leading the way that year. But we had Todd Gurley going to the Rams at number 10, and then the Chargers trading up, which I actually think was a good bit of business by the 49ers, who still got their guy two picks later. They trade up to get Melvin Gordon. And it was funny, Jeff. I was doing the show here on Sky Sports last night, and you were live tweeting throughout. And we both went onto Twitter within a matter of seconds of each other, and we probably hadn't even looked at each other's Twitter feeds. And we both said that Jeff Fisher's just got his 2015 version of Eddie George in Todd Gurley. And I think a few people replied and said, you and I are spending too much time together.
But you know what? You had Gurley as your top back. I had Gordon as my top back. But you know what? What Gurley's going to bring Jeff Fisher is what he's been craving in St. Louis. If you look at the success that he had with the Titans, it was based upon the ability to run the football and run the football into those eight-man fronts. And you need a guy who's physical and will punish tacklers to do that. And that's exactly what Todd Gurley is. Maybe to a fault. The physical running back. He's going to pound it up in there, and he loves to run over. He's got the speed to run around you, but he's a physical Jeff Fisher kind of back. And then you look at the Chargers, and they lose Ryan Matthews in the offseason. You know, they've got kind of two situational backs out there in Woodhead and the rookie, and so they need a guy that can be the milk cow, the guy that can really carry the ball 25 times a game, and Gordon has proven in his college career that he can do that. 400 yards, Neil, against a good Nebraska defense. The guy is really, really a good football player. Big, physical, fast.
When we look at the wide receivers, Jeff, Oakland took Amari Cooper, number 4. Chicago took Kevin White, 7 overall. Then the Miami Dolphins took Devontae Parker at number 14. Let's have a look down the list we go. Philadelphia got Nelson Agholor, who could be a really good weapon in there. Offense. Breshad Perriman goes to the Baltimore Ravens, and Philip Dorsett to the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff, I've had a few people on Twitter today saying, what are the Colts doing? We need offensive line help and safety help. I would just say this draft has got another 6 rounds to play out over the next 2 days. I actually love that pick of Philip Dorsett. It's another piece to Andrew Luck's puzzle around him. I think he's tough. I think he's a bit similar to T.Y. Hilton, but you know this is a team that lost Levon Brazil with last year. They didn't get much out of Hakeem Nick, so they still need, I think, some help at receiver, and I think this young guy gives it to them.
I agree with you. I think that he'll fill a spot for them. You know, you get two vertical guys now with he and Hilton. And anytime you can get a receiver with legitimate track speed, and that's what this kid has. He's got, you know, world-class track speed and can catch the football. Then you've got to take that, because let's make no mistake about it. They bring in Frank Gore, but Indianapolis is still going to win football games throwing the ball at Andrew Luck. And I say, Neil, this is a great, in my opinion, a great pick. He gives them another dynamic threat. Can't have enough playmakers.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you about the couple of edge rushers we discussed earlier in the week. We talked about Shane Ray and we talked about Randy Gregory, how they'd had lots of off-the-field issues that could come back to haunt them. Well, Randy Gregory dropped all the way out of the first round, so that, you know, that's a multi-million dollar mistake that he's been making. And Shane Ray, it's probably the same way. I think a lot of people had Shane Ray in their top 10. He goes to number 23 in the end to the Denver Broncos, who trade up from 28 to 23. And I wanted to ask you this from a coach's and from a football perspective, because he was a top 10, possibly a top 10 pick. So he was out of Denver's range. Would Denver have done what you guys call their due diligence anyway and would know all about this player? Or would they have suddenly developed an interest late this week knowing that he might fall down the draft board?
Well, there were some people that had questions about Ray to begin with. You know, he's a great first-step rusher. He only played, really, really only started 1 year at Missouri. He's kind of he's truly an edge guy, Neil, but he's not very big. He's 6'2", 245 pounds. I think that they would have had certainly a dossier on him and known an awful lot about him, because he was in that top three or four or five pass rushers off the edge. DeMarcus Ware's getting older. They need to replace him. And, you know, he was one of the guys I'm certainly sure that they would have done an awful lot of work on. But after the incident, I would be willing to bet you that they now got in contact with the kid, got in contact with his agent, and were convinced, John Elway and the Broncos brass were convinced, that this was a one-off, a one-time incident, and that the kid was a good kid. My concern, Neil, is he may only have pot in his car one time, but why the one time did you do it? It's the week of the draft, and you're caught at 5:37 a.m. Mm. Those things are red lights to me, or red flags to me about the kid.
Yeah, about decision making. Jeff, we talked in our State of the Franchise a few weeks ago. We talked about the Carolina Panthers, and I think I said at one point they were built in an old style way. They were loaded at running back. They were loaded at linebacker. And yesterday, when they were on the clock, I felt sure Breshad Perriman was still available. I felt sure they were going to go wide receiver, or they were going to take an offensive tackle and help out Cam Newton. And they had this guy from Washington, Shaq Thompson, that we talked about earlier this week about how he's a bit of a jack of all trades and maybe a master of none. But you know, unless they're going to use this guy as a big sort of Cam Chancellor type, my first question was why was your pressing need another linebacker, or is this again they just had him on their board as the best player available?
You know what? I had this discussion with my son Cole, who's the biggest Carolina Panther fan in North America, and I said to him, I said, Cole, what in the world are they doing taking a guy that can't find a position as a college football player? He's a hybrid safety, he's a linebacker, he's a running back. You know, he scored 7 touchdowns senior in Washington, 3 on offense, 4 on defense. He's a football player, right? And I'm sure what they did when Gettleman and those guys looked at their board, they just said, he's the best pure football player on the board at this time. We got to take him. I think it's a bad choice, because they're not at that point with that franchise where they can just go take the best player available. They have definitive needs. Tackle is one of them. If Michael Orr is your starting tackle, he's been proven in the last, both in Baltimore and in Tennessee, that he's not a guy to protect your quarterback. And they have glaring needs still at wide receiver. So I agree with you. This was a surprise pick to me.
What other ones did you like, Jeff, in turn? Well, maybe if we look at ones we liked, ones we disliked, and maybe underrated ones that are not getting talked about. I mean, is there one where you say, well, that's just outstanding value for the team right there?
Well, I think, you know, the Jets getting Williams at the spot they got him. McKagan has to feel like here's my first draft with the team, and that best defensive player on a lot of people's boards falls to me at the number 5 pick. So I'd say the Jets got to feel really good about that one. I was surprised that the tackle from Florida went, you know, low as he did. That one was shocking to me because we talked about him last week, Neil. He's the best pass protector in the draft, in my opinion. I thought Andrew Peak was a surprise to go that high because he shows that he plays a little bit too high at times. He's a little heavy-footed. And then the one that really shocked me was that Kansas City would take Peters, the cornerback from Washington, who got kicked off his college team after numerous run-ins with coaches, and they would take him that high in the draft. Now, I understand corners are valuable. That's a value position. But if the guy has enough problems with authority that he gets kicked off of his own college football team in his senior year when you're trying to make an impression for the NFL scouts, that one was a head-scratcher. Now, here's what I heard, was that the Washington coaches just murdered the kid, just said nothing good about him. But they went to Steve Sarkisian at USC, who had coached the kid previously, and he gave the kid a glowing report. My question is, hey, do you think Sarkisian, who's recruiting against those coaches at Washington, isn't going to try and you know, skew the table? So, I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, and one pick later, Jeff, the Cleveland Browns did take Cameron Irving, the center and guard who really could have been the replacement for Rodney Hudson at center for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, and I look at Cleveland. Absolutely. Cleveland, that was a very grown-up draft for Cleveland. They took Danny Shelton and Cam Irving. There was no big Johnny Manziel moment for the Browns, but two very solid players.
Yeah, you know what? I think I agree with you. Shelton in particular addresses that run need that they have inside. They were just soft inside. He's obviously a dominant big man. Doesn't run very good. But I tell you what, short burst quickness, he has the ability to pitchfork guys and you know, even big offensive tackles or guards in the Pac-12. He was able to just maul. I like him, obviously, to help them. That's a neat pick. And I thought that you're right. They got the best center in the draft as insurance against Alex Mack leaving. And then also he's good enough to start for him at guard, which is, you know, they've got a nasty-looking offensive line now.
Yeah, they listed him when they announced the pick. They listed him as a guard at that point, which I thought was pretty amusing as well. Jeff, I think Eric Flowers at 9 overall for the New York Giants would be one where I would be looking and wondering about the value. Certainly, the need is there, but I think there's technique issues. You'd certainly say that in pass protection, DJ Humphries is a more accomplished pass protector. And the other head scratcher for me was the Shaq Thompson one, as I've mentioned. I think an under-the-radar one, as we were certainly on this side of the pond all getting ready to fall asleep in our breakfast, was Malcolm Brown to New England with the final pick of the first round. I think he could be that big shoes to fill, big everything to fill, really, when it's Vince Wilfork who's leaving. But, you know, Malcolm Brown was a good pick there for the Patriots.
I agree. I thought that he was the second best inside guy. When we talked about the defensive players, Neil, we talked about his ability to get upfield, 300 pounds, but can really move for a guy that big. He's going to be more athletic inside than Wolfork was. Now he's got to prove he can be a guy that demands the double team as good as Vince did. But I think for the Patriots, they got younger, they got more athletic, and they still have a big point of attack inside guy to fit a need for them. So when you're picking with the 32nd pick, you can get a guy that fits the definite need that you have for your defense. I think that's a really good pick for New England.
Jeff, explain to fans and our listeners over the next couple of days. I mean, there's still lots of value to be had out there, isn't there? I mean, Alfred Morris was a 6th round pick. Russell Wilson was a 3rd rounder. Cam Chancellor, 5th rounder. I mean, we do focus on round one, but yeah, and the teams would have had a plan here. So, you know, if they haven't gone with every need in round one, these next couple of days are vitally important.
Yeah, absolutely, because now's where you do your work. Now's where you make your money in the draft. It's easy to figure out who the top 32 players are. It's tougher to figure out who that guy is that you're going to get at 70 to 90 that's going to come in and impact your football team. And so this is where the scouts and the personnel guys earn the money. This is where the guys like Ozzie Newsome, who typically draft real well in the second through fifth category, they find those guys that come in and become outstanding NFL players that are maybe just a little bit under the radar when you consider the first round. So to me, Neil, now it really gets interesting. Now is where you really start to see team strategies, how they're going to affect now the need areas of their football team. You know, you and the, talk about the Dolphins all the time, and I think the Dolphins did a really good job in the first round, got another threat for, you know, for their football team, and now can they help themselves now? Can they find a corner? Can they get some of their needs met? It's going to be interesting to see because there's still a lot of good football players out there.
One guy we haven't talked about really, Jeff, the first name that was called, Jameis Winston. I mean, he was surrounded by his family. He wasn't there in Chicago. He's now got to make that transition, and I guess people will be looking at a transition, you know, on and off the field. So interesting times ahead for young Jameis.
I give the kid full mark for the fact that at his draft party, the entree that was served was crab legs. So he did a great job of taking a shot at the media and all the doubters out there. So, again, I thought that was kind of amusing. You know, the kid had that, you know, you could see the little boy in him last night after he got picked and the raw excitement that he had. And actually when the NFL Network gave him that gold football as being the first player picked, and he thought they were off. They were off camera. He came back to the NFL Network guy, and he said, "Hey, can I keep this?" Well, even though he's not picking the draft, sometimes you're still just a kid at heart.
Absolutely. And Jeff, when we get you back over here, we want to see you rocking Dante Fowler's shoes.
Hey, I tell you what, you can have Dante Fowler's shoes. I'll wear the lava for my boys from Washington. How's that sound?
Well, at least you know what it is, and you named it. Mike Mayock on the coverage last night said, "Is he up there on stage in a dress?"
So, see, that is so wrong. How could you be that politically unaware? Mayock went to Boston College. I thought that was a good school.
There you go. So, Jeff, it's just as we wrap up on this edition of Inside the Huddle, we will be back on Tuesday to go through the complete drafts for all the teams, as we said. We're only one round into this seven-round process so far as we recap the headlines. Jeff, do you enjoy watching the first round unfold? Because I guess when you've been in college football, you know the number of hours that these players have to put in. We're looking and saying, oh, he's gone from being picked, expected to be picked ninth, and he's gone 15th. We're looking at the actual end process, but there have been hours and weeks and months and years of preparation for this.
But it hits me you see a college coach, you see a kid get an opportunity to go to the National Football League and fulfill his dream. I watched David Shaw do the broadcast yesterday, the head coach at Stanford. It's big for the coaches, too, because he's trying to sell his program to the next group, a bunch of 18-year-old kids that are dreaming an NFL dream. And he's got a guy like Andrew Seaton, Andrew Luck, and all these first-rounders that he's had at Stanford. He can now go out and sell Stanford as a place that you can go to develop into an NFL player. And then for the coaches and the personnel guys, I've lived that experience, too, where you've evaluated, you've worked hard, you've done everything you could possibly do to stack your board the way you want it, and then you're just on pins and needles as you watch names come off the board, hoping that guy who you think is your franchise guy is still there when you pick. So it hit me on a number of levels.
All right, Jeff. Hey, listen, one last thing. They let me loose on your touchscreen last night, and I think you'd done a stitch-up job because I had the top 10 on the touchscreen, and I basically could just sweep out the logos of the teams and put in other teams if there was going to be a trade. So I started saying at the start of the show, imagine if Tennessee come out of there, swept Tennessee all the way down to the bottom of the screen, which meant they disappeared. They disappeared off the screen, and then like half a second later, they popped back up. So I did it again. This is all live on TV. Swept them to the bottom again. Half a second later, popped back up. Swept them out again. and they popped back up again. Somebody had gone crazy with the touchscreen. So I ended up turning to the camera saying, OK, so Tennessee are staying put at number two. The touchscreen has spoken. And they did. So there's no science to it.
You are like a savant. You're like the Yoda of the draft.
Clearly. Well, either that or I'm just not good with technology. I think it's more likely to be the latter. Listen, Jeff, we'll let you get going. We'll let everyone get on with their preparations for tonight, the draft. You can follow it on NFL.com and tomorrow night, Saturday, on NFL.com as well. We will be back on Tuesday inside the huddle to dissect the complete 2015 draft. Until then, Coach, say goodbye.